Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Boy, we have an exciting time ahead with Stan Friedman as my guest. Stan, of course, across an extensive career, has excelled by introducing franchising outside the mainstream, whether as the founding member of the IFA Diversity Institute or as chair of the advisory board of the Professional Athletes Franchise Initiative, or within key leadership positions at several prominent franchise organizations. Stan has repeatedly thought outside the box to create opportunities for individuals outside the typical franchise candidate profile. We'll introduce Stan here momentarily. Right now we have the at Franchise Essentials Media Group, we have Fran Summit going on, which is our second annual Franchise Social Media Summit. If you have not yet signed on or haven't even thought about it, give a look at fransummit.com because this entire week will be on demand for the same registration fee. And it's 13 different speakers within franchising across 5 days, 2 hours a day. So it's 10 hours of just great content, and really excited again that we're getting a lot of traction within our within the international franchise community. And, of course, speaking about international franchise, the International Franchise Association, last month we mentioned the Public Affairs Conference. Just great information, a great initiative. So many people dedicated their time, and I can't say enough about it. So make sure you get out and vote, and of course, pro-business all the way. Upcoming next week, and I'm sure our guest today will be there as well, as Franchise Update Leadership Conference in Buckhead, which is right outside of Atlanta. Looking forward to being there myself. And then a week later, the West Coast Franchise Expo out in Anaheim this year in California should be a really great event. And then in November, we have the Franchise Brokers Association Conference and Expo in Orlando, Florida, and I'm proud to be speaking at that event about personal branding for franchise brokers. So really an exciting time ahead in franchising as the fall, the autumn, always is in the franchise community. It seems like we go a million miles an hour, hit Thanksgiving, and come to this screeching halt and then start preparing for the IFA conference, convention and conference in 2013 in February in Las Vegas again. And I'm happy to say that I should be walking across the stage as I will have my have earned my CFE designation. I'm really excited. Just can't believe I waited so long to do so. And speaking of CFE, my guest today, Stan Friedman, is a certified franchise executive specializing in franchise development for more than 23 years. He's held leadership and executive positions, including the Senior VP of FranConnect, a franchise client conference, executive VP and partner at WingZone, executive VP at WSI Internet, ERA Franchise Systems, and Prudential Real Estate Affiliates. Stan's a founding board member of the International Franchise Association's Diversity Institute, where he served as first vice chair since its inception. In 2011, the IFA honored Stan with its Ronald E. Harrison Diversity Award, previously only awarded 7 times. In the IFA's 52-year history. Stan also chairs the advisory board of PAFI, the Professional Athletes Franchise Initiative. And we had Michael Stone on, I guess, about a year and a half ago from PAFI. That episode, that segment is available on demand. And he collaborates with the IFA and its members to bring soon-to-retire professional athletes to a new playing field, that of franchise ownership. Now Stan has expanded his professional profile to include Tutor Doctor, a one-on-one home tutoring franchise with more than 200 units in 7 countries. Stan recently became its VP of North American Franchise Development in May 2012. Stan, welcome to Franchise Today.
Paul, thank you so much for having me on the program. I appreciate the opportunity to spend an hour with you.
Yeah, same here. I know so many times we see each other at events and we always say, you know, hey, we got to catch up, we got to talk, and before you know it, there's another event that we're saying the same thing. So I guess we had to get on the air in order to do so.
There it is. And just by way of a quick update to that which you've just delivered, the number of territories being operated by Tudor Doctor franchisees today are actually numbering 323. And those are in 9 countries on 3 continents. So just a bit
really
of an update
exciting.
There.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Well, you know, certainly you've been involved in the franchise industry for many, many years. Just looking at the industry kind of from a global perspective, what are some of the changes that you might have noticed in the franchise industry? And maybe you could elaborate a little bit more and tell us a little bit what you feel are emerging trends that you see coming down the pike.
I think the most significant change or trend that we've all experienced, Paul, has been the reset button that got hit a few years ago when the economy took a nosedive, and for the first time in all of the years that records have been kept on franchising and metrics for franchise growth and expansion, this was probably the first recession that has occurred that did not really become a franchise-friendly type of an event as an offshoot. Typically, franchising has seen spikes in growth when people are being displaced or taking early retirements or being impacted by downsizing or right-sizing or whatever the politically correct term is these days. But this time it didn't work quite the same way because that access to capital issue hit us at about the same time as the recession. And so otherwise worthy candidates that should have in any other situation or time in our history have been able to qualify for bank financing or SBA-type conventional lending to obtain franchises found themselves hitting walls. And that created something of a much different scenario for us to get our heads around. And continually, it has created some barriers to entry into the franchising space that we've really never seen in recessionary times before. So I think that's kind of some of the trend line that we've all had to try to figure out how to work through and work around. And, the rest of the world and government has seemingly gotten as onerous, and regulation has become a big part of all of our lives. It used to be that we thought we were the standalones with all the regulations that embody the franchise relationship, but we've seen government grow too big for anyone's good, I think. And that's just had a very, very negative impact on small and medium enterprise. Of course, that's franchising. So it's caused some people to maybe hold back a little more than we'd like in terms of creating those jobs that feed the GDP and help the economy grow. And we've just got to get through a few more months here and see what comes, or a few more weeks, actually. And hopefully some things after the election will start to loosen up and get better.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, looking back at previous recessions, I agree with you. In the past, it's usually spurred franchise growth. Of course, they had the ability back then to tap into credit and be able to get granted credit. And, you know, in the past, I remember back in the late 80s, right after the oil bust and the big recession, when money markets were generating 16-17% returns, and people had an opportunity to control their own destiny by tapping into the gains they had with such a high return and still be able to hold on to their principal. And they almost had this feeling that it was found money, it was won money. And so let me take a gamble on it. Let me take a little bit of a risk with it. And although they knew there was obviously risk involved, they were willing to roll the dice a little bit, so to speak. And today, what I'm hearing a lot, and I'm sure everybody else in the franchise community is hearing, especially in franchise sales and development, are people saying, yeah, now I've got to invest it, and I understand there's risk, but to use the old adage from Apollo 13, failure's not an option. Mm-hmm. And so they're definitely more cautious and more diligent than ever before, which, of course, you know, just creates a little bit of a different approach from today's franchise candidates and of course, how we deal with those candidates. And it's really some interesting times ahead for franchising, but I'm confident that they are good times ahead for franchising.
I couldn't agree with you more, Paul. And, you know, it's as is the case with anything, people have options and choices to make. And, you know, I had a CFO that I worked for many years ago who had a one-line statement that stuck with me through all these years, and that said that change is certain, growth is optional. And, you know, it's what we do in the decisions that we make, and where that money market principle was, as you described in years past, kind of secure, and the interest that it was creating gave you maybe more of a hand to play. So today people are looking at what's left of 401, 301, or 201Ks because some of the other conventional sources of capitalization of their dreams have just dried up and have had to make some choices and look for more creative ways to maybe through a Benetrends or a guidance or, you know, to be able to access capital in places where their good credit and an SBA loan should have been able to carry them in years past.
Yeah, certainly it seems like there are definitely more options and a little bit more creativity. I mean, even in this space, you know, seeing a lot of this crowdsourcing on new concepts. I mean, so I think we're probably limited only to, or at least to an extent, only by our creativity and imagination and being able to source out some of these options that are available. And certainly they're very innovative options. I know at the recent Dealmakers Summit, the Private Equity and Franchising Conference in Chicago, listening to some of the individuals, Rocco Fiorentino and his staff over at Benetrends and some of the somewhat creative ways of putting together financing. And when I say creative, I mean, obviously, I mean, you know, to the point by the book. I'm not, you know, talking about anything that is so outside the box that it's illegal, but it just, it's become such a complicated world in financial circles with all the restrictions that are being put in place because of, you know, the near banking collapse and everything else that really it's going to take the innovators, the creators of these new options, you know, kind of not much different than maybe what Michael Milken did back in the day with junk bonds. And I remember reading books about it, and I remember when he got sentenced, and afterwards the judge said, you know, I just knew that he had to be guilty of something, and yet I wasn't sure exactly what. And it just gives an idea that when something is different, we immediately say that it's that it might not be legal or ethical or whatever. But certainly there are avenues out there that people could tap into in a very ethical, moral, and legal way, and the financial world is full of them right now. You know, over your career, what I think I've been most impressed as I've gotten to know you some here and there, brief conversations and reading about you is, as I said in the title for today's show, as I promoted it, Creating Opportunities Where Little Existed Before, through the diversity channels, through the Professional Athletes Franchise Initiative. It always seems that you're thinking a little bit outside the box in order to introduce franchising somewhat out of the mainstream, if anything, to create opportunities for individuals outside what is the typical franchise candidate profile. What are some of your thoughts? What drives you towards that, and what's your vision towards that, and what might be coming down the pike in your mind?
Well, I think the driver for that, Paul, is just it's an insatiable appetite to grow things and to cross bridges, to bring people together. That I mean, it's what drives anyone in franchise development is, you know, taking two pieces of land that aren't connected and bridging them and synergizing, and you know, the whole world of interdependency that we live with in franchising is part of my DNA. I love it. I love connecting people. I love being connected to people. You know, guys like Jerry Darnell and myself that live on LinkedIn or Facebook and just continue to always just drive connections. You know, that's what somebody like me loves to do more than anything. And to be in the business that I'm in and have that in my DNA it just makes for a natural progression of thinking about ways to get people that might not otherwise connect to connect. And in some cases, you mentioned Rock Fiorentino. You know, Rock and I had a conversation a couple of months ago at the Fran Connect conference in D.C., and we were just talking about out-of-the-box things. And, of course, as passionate as we all know Rocco to be about Benetrends and franchising, he's equally, if not more, passionate about the Little Rock Foundation and the work that he does for his mm-hmm. son and for the visually impaired. And Rocco mm-hmm. and I got into a conversation just over that very thing. Stan, what would Tutor Doctor think about the idea, perhaps, of awarding franchises to visually impaired people? Is that something that would be possible? I'm about 2 weeks into the job at this point, I might add, Paul. And I said, gee, Rock, I don't know, but that's kind of an interesting idea. How might that look? And we started talking about it. Well, it wasn't 3 or 4 weeks later that Rocco and Tina were sitting in our boardroom up in Toronto with our leadership team talking through the possibilities for creating franchise opportunities for the visually impaired. And literally, we just did a check off of what are the things that a Tutor Doctor franchisee must do, must be able to do. And, you know, Rocco's first concern was, well, you guys are in-home tutoring. Does the franchisee have to go to the home and drive the car? Well, obviously, that would be a deal breaker. But it turned out that we were able to check off those things that are essential for the operation of our business and come to the conclusion that under all other circumstances being equal, a visually impaired person could operate a Tutor Doctor franchise if systems were put in place to provide for Braille, you know, for different ways for computer screens to be seen mm-hmm. in red. And we've begun a program. You know, we're putting a program in place. We're working with Rocco and several others from the worlds of the public and private sector connections that Tina and he are involved with through their work with Little Rock Foundation. And we are going to look for ways to take those who are deemed by many to be virtually unemployable, much less unemployable. We're going to try to make business owners of them that can make contributions to the economy and create opportunities for others to become tutors under their Tutor Doctor businesses and not just become business owners, but create jobs and bring value to the families that they can serve. These are people who would otherwise be viewed as you know, can't be helped or can't even have a job, much less own a business, and unless a couple of people that think outside the box sit down and have conversations like that, none of those things can happen. So I love doing that, Paul. It's what I'm driven by it.
Yeah, that's just a fantastic story. And, yeah, you're right. So many people deem those type of individuals as unemployable, and it's really a shame. But, you know, hats off to you and Rocco for having the conversation and taking it beyond the conversation. And I think that's the key. We hear too much talk these days and not enough action. And I certainly see the action here, which, you know, leads me to the effort with Paffy. Being a former athlete, not certainly in the professional sense, but at the amateur level, and being an avid sports fan, we take so many things for granted. And when I had Michael Stone of Paffy on, I guess it was about a year and a half ago, and listening to the story about what some of the athletes go through right out of retirement, listening to the stories of thinking about how they spend their entire lives from sixth grade in sports to high school to college, and then, you know, maybe only playing a year or two in the NFL, and then bam, all of a sudden it's this empty world. And how did you get involved with Paffy? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Paffy found me, actually. Michael came to the IFA with a vision for trying to break that trend of athletes who typically the metric that we hear from Michael and from those in the player associations tell us that a lot of these guys within 2 years of their last game are broke and they haven't had the guidance. You know, it's the same thing that we hear happening to people who have quick wins and fast money comes their way through a lottery ticket, but did not have mm-hmm. the education or the background or the upbringing to be able to manage that money. A lot of these athletes see very fast money And sometimes that money goes as quick as it comes because it's mismanaged or misspent, or it goes because, you know, they had a multi-million dollar career and then they took an injury and it's over and there was no contemplation for what's going to come next. Michael came to the IFA and proposed that he had a vision for franchising perhaps being a vehicle that could carry the athlete to his next playbook. And we were asked through the Diversity Institute to take a closer look because where are you going to find a more diverse pool to draw from than the world of professional athletics? And so when IFA was approached by Michael, they viewed this as something that made sense to give to the Diversity Institute to vet and to consider. And we did. And I got involved with Michael's first summit here in Atlanta probably three some years ago as chairman of his host committee to help bring that event together. And later, through the relationship that's ensued and the friendship, really, that Michael and I have forged, he asked me to chair an advisory board, and I brought together a group of IFA luminaries to help guide the initiative with some more permanence and to create some programs that could gain some traction through the resources of this advisory board, guys like Lane Fisher and Ron Feldman and Brad Fishman and you know, Kay Ainsley and a host of us that are all IFA active to help guide Michael's initiative. And at the end of the day, a pro athlete, all other things being equal, could be an excellent candidate for a franchise, just like a former veteran, all things being equal, could. We've seen the results through VetFran. You know, these are guys who are given playbooks and told to put their heads down and execute, execute, execute. Well, what is a franchisee told to do? Take the ops manual and execute, execute, execute. Yep. So it's not for all of them and it's not for everyone, but given the right amounts of education and information on the athlete side and also on the franchisor side, helping the franchisor understand that you may have to make some adjustments to how you communicate or coach an athlete instead of dictate or, you know, support a typical franchisee that came from a different realm. There could be some real traction and some bonds, and we've seen some great successes already. And through these initiatives and summits that we've hosted, we've had great many speakers coming to the convention at the IFA, and where we've hosted a couple of these summits, and down at Nova University a month or so ago, we did our third summit and had over 100 people in attendance, lots of athletes with their families, their parents, their advisors, their wives, and we had panels of athletes, former athletes, that are now current franchisees who help inspire the next and upcoming groups to start thinking about putting money away now while you're still playing ball, and to think of things like Wharton and Kellogg and continuing your education, learning about what comes after your body says no more, but you still have the need to print money. Well, we can't all go to Bernanke. Some of us have to do some other things, and that's what we're trying to help these Twilight Year players think about now.
Yeah, and of course, you know, sometimes it's even beyond their own inability to manage money. They depend on certain people, so-called advisors that take advantage. I know all over the news this week in Houston has been the saga of Vince Young, now with the Buffalo Bills, having, you know, obviously a very lucrative contract, and to hear that he's almost broke. Of course, a lot of people would say, you know, shame on him for, you know, pissing the money away, but I don't think in this case that was the case. Might have just been some, you know, ill advice and maybe some less than honorable people dealing with his money. But, you know, you hear that story too much. But I think the bigger story, you know, might be, as Michael Stone had said, you know, a lot of people don't realize, and of course we're just talking about the NFL, but there are similar stories in other professional sports, but in football, where the average career span is only a couple of 3 years, and you you know, a lineman that might not have as big of a contract, but yet, when they sign that contract out of college, what appears to be all the money in the world really isn't that much, especially as they try to keep pace with some of the other athletes, and they really hit a wall. And I think what really hits me and really has generated my interest in this is that whole theory of what happened afterwards. You know, you hear about, you know, returning veterans that might have done, you know, two or three or four tours in Afghanistan or Iraq, and they come home and all of a sudden it's just so different. A lot of them don't know how to react. You hear the same thing about, you know, people that have been incarcerated, have been in there for 15 or 20 years, now being introduced back into society, and they don't know how to act. And a lot of those people wind up back in because they've actually grown comfortable in that environment. And you hear about these athletes from the time they were, you know, knee high to, you know, being involved in, you know, amateur sports and all the way through college. They hook on with a team, and then all of a sudden that day comes, and it doesn't even have to be a young athlete. It could be one that's in the twilight of their career. And we heard recently about, you know, Junior Seau and the tragedy there. But they hit this wall, and all of a sudden they're no longer involved. You know, why not?
You hit on a point, though, with Vince Young blowing through $26 million in a few years. That's the exception, but that's what grabs the headline. The actuality is that there are a great many position players who are never heard of. You know, you don't
that's
know
right.
their names. They're not Vince Young. And like us, you know, you go to school and you have a 16 or 20-year academic career between growing up and going to high school and then on to college and maybe grad school. And so all of us then get our degrees and we get out into the real world and we still have another 20 or 25 or 30 years or more to go repay our loans and to you know, take our learning and become professionals with what we've been taught. So we get a much longer ramp, if you will, a much longer hockey stick to go practice our trade and make our fortunes, where these guys get into the game and you hear about these guys making a couple of million a year, but you know, that seems like a lot of money. But if you take that over 30 or 35 years and they're done in 2 years, they really haven't made a lot of money at all, and they haven't thought about what comes next. And that's really the focus that PAFI has placed its energy against, is trying to just help some of these guys think a little further ahead. Having John Rocci on our board has been really insightful, because John takes this work and brings it even back to the college level and tries to get some of these kids in Michigan to start thinking about what's going to come after the game, even before they get to the game. And so, you know, that's what it takes. And the more of that we can instill, a lot of lives will be positively impacted. Some of these players will then open up successful businesses and contribute to the economy in a positive way, create jobs that weren't there, and you know, everybody wins. But it's all begin with the end in mind, and it's just understanding from day one you got to sometimes get out of the box a little further and help bring parties and people together that might otherwise not have met, and then let them go and see what comes from it. Hopefully good things will.
You know, you mentioned John Rocci, and he was over at the Dealmaker Summit on the panel talking about the experience, and talk about an inspirational story that makes you want to just go out and feel like conquer the world. This guy's the real thing for sure. You know, you mentioned a few times as you were talking about Paffy and you talking about some of your experiences, and I hear this underlying tone that just keeps popping up, which is education. So I almost think that it's absolutely fitting that you're now with Tutor Doctor. Tell us how that came about. What's your new role like with Tutor Doctor? Because, I mean, even though it is in franchising, it is quite different from some of the other brands that you were with earlier in your career.
But appropriate for the times, and Paul, I can't think of a better place to be, given the times that we're in, than with a brand that has a very, very low barrier for entry, a brand that is not infrastructure but home-based driven, so that it's much, much easier for someone, even in these times that we're in, to be able to find their way into a business model like ours that has very little infrastructure associated with it and has such tremendous upside potential and need. I mean, the other thing we continue to hear about in today's world is not just the budget cuts and the slashing and the problems with access to capital that we've experienced in our worlds in franchising, but states going broke and cities going broke and all the problems with education. Kids are getting less and less, needing more and more, and the gap continues to grow. What Tutor Doctor does is in large part fills many of those gaps by making a difference in the lives of the families that we impact by virtue of what it is we deliver. So the services are growing, the need for the services are growing. Even in a tough economy where parents might be inclined to cut back on some of their own personal indulgences, you know, I always crack about Starbucks, which I call $4, and say, so somebody might cut back on their $4 and go drink a McDonald's or a Dunkin' coffee, but they're not going to cut back on their child needing some help with homework or their child having problems with perhaps not getting into the schools of choice because their grades were not what they needed to be. And the truth is, Paul, we've taken, just like I love doing out-of-the-box things and create opportunities in places that others might not have even been looking, we've got Tutor Doctor franchisees in our system that have done some incredible things tutoring students that are outside the often considered normal paradigm of grades K through 12. So if I were to ask you, Paul, how old you might think the oldest student tutored by a Tutor Doctor tutor might be, what would you think the answer to that would be?
I probably would have thought it would be probably the freshman year of high school, 13, 14, 15 tops.
So how about trying something a little north of that, like 94 years old?
Oh, wow.
94 years old. Think about this, Paul. I mean, this particular situation was somebody that was trying to organize the skills required to write a book and to do the word processing around that. But from that idea came others. What else could seniors benefit from that a Tutor Doctor franchisee could deliver to them? Think about shut-ins. Think about the elderly that are confined to a retirement community or even to a bed that if they're lucky get to see their kids or their grandkids a couple of times a month, if that often, who can be tutored on how to use an iPad and Skype and watch streaming phone conversations with their grandkids every day. I mean, you can't imagine the do well by doing good, purpose-driven, and that's what we look for in our franchisees, the ability to make life-changing moments, realities, and to be purpose-driven and to, you know, as Frank Milner, our president, so often says, it's one thing to make a dollar. It's another thing to make a difference. And that's really the DNA of Tutor Doctor. So to your question about being here, what a better place to be than a place where you can not just make a dollar, but make a difference, where the people who become your franchisees are being entrusted to go into their communities with that type of vision for what they're chartered to do, if you will, and to be able to deliver services that make differences in the lives of the families, and then to be able to make a living, a good living, taking care of the needs of our up-and-coming kids or even our seniors. But literally anybody who needs help in improving their situation, whether it's the normal K-12, whether it's the proactive get in front of the work so that, you know, maybe Johnny is a high school football player and has to maintain a certain grade point average to keep playing ball, so the parents bring a tutor just to stay ahead of the work. And then as these kids advance toward the ACT and SAT and tests, you know, become important to be able to make it into the schools of choice so that dad can proudly say, I'm going to get my son into the school I want him to play ball for, not the one that will take him. You know, there again, you see a lot of parents that they'll forego their own indulgences and make the money available so that they can impact positively on the lives of their children. And that's what really drives this business. It makes this business compelling. And literally, the DNA in our business, we've got franchisees that are single unit operators that work in territories that are as small as just 100,000 people. And we've got what we call empire builders who own multiple territories. And these are people who come out of corporate America and have the ability and the business acumen to really grow and scale their businesses to a different degree. But the one common denominator that is present in both cases is that DNA that says, I'm a purpose-driven person and I'm going to make a difference in the lives of the people whose business it is my business to touch and to make, you know, a difference in the lives of those families.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, certainly outside of franchising, but, you know, even within franchising, might not completely understand what Tutor Doctor really does, because I think a lot of them probably lump it into, you know, children's education franchising, mm-hmm. and it'd be more curriculum driven. But from what you're explaining, it's really to facilitate the point of what they need to learn, but probably more towards, you know, developing habits, etc. But I don't want to put words in your mouth.
You're pretty spot on. I mean, we are focused on fundamental building blocks. So our tutors are taught by our franchisees to go into the home and even the franchisees who do the educational consulting in the beginning to assess the need will go into a home and make a determination as to what the need is. You know, is this child really struggling? If it's a child having problems with math, and let's say it's division, and they're struggling with that, and they're coming home with homework that they can't finish and they can't get it right, is the problem really division? Or is the problem something mm-hmm. from the prior year that they didn't master those building blocks, and as a result of getting the multiplication or the plus and minus is wrong, now they can't do the division? So we make an assessment. Is this a remedial problem, or is this some other problem in the current moment, or is it either? It could easily be a reading problem, and maybe they're not understanding or comprehending correctly. So we kind of try to isolate, you know, what the need is, and then we try to isolate to what type of a student we're dealing with. Does this child learn visually? Does he learn audio, orally? Does he learn kinesthetically? So that you can match then a tutor that's going to not only bring the need to those fundamental building blocks, but bring it with the right style. And then we try also to find out what else is important to that child. So when that child's not struggling with schoolwork, what is it that this kid likes to do? And if we have a child that's a soccer player, and his passion is soccer, and he's struggling with math, we're going to look as deep as we have to onto our bench of tutors to not only find a tutor on our roster that can accommodate the academic need, but we're going to find a tutor that can accommodate the academic need that might also be a soccer coach or a soccer player.
Right.
And this child and that tutor then have a magical match that says, you know, Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock when it's tutor time, it's not just going to be the kid going, oh, God, it's time for that tutor to come again. It's going to be, wow, we're going to talk soccer today. And it changes mentality. And these children are impacted in such a way, Paul, by us not being, you know, our curriculum, standardized curriculum, but being fundamental building blocks and working with real issues in real time. We not only make a difference in helping C's or D's become B's or A's, but we make a difference, a much bigger difference, in what happens to that child's confidence the next day. When that child goes to school and can't answer a question, he sits in fear of being called on. When he goes to school and he's got the work figured out, it's ooh, 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 can't wait to be called on, because his confidence has gone shooting straight through the roof. And it makes a huge difference in not just the work and the grade, but it makes a difference in the molding of that child's whole demeanor about how he feels about school and his attitude toward education and his confidence and his self-confidence. It's just, it's great to see it. And we see these reports on our website every single day in real time. You know, we use Listen 360 to get the voice of the customer and to learn what's going on in our world and in our universe so that we can see the impact and the changes that we're making on the lives of the families that are connected to us. So it's a great feeling to be able to at this stage of my career, to be able to also be connected to a brand that makes a huge difference and to bring the right people to the right place for the right reasons at the right time, and have the ability to do that with a brand that can make such an impact on the markets that it enters. Because typically, you know, the only competition that we really see in the marketplace, Paul, is those learning centers, the brick-and-mortar facilities. Well, you're taking a child that may have a classroom problem, moving him from one classroom into another, and where he's also one with many instead of one-on-one. We bring parents the convenience of bringing the tutor to the home. This is all in-home tutoring. It's done in the in the kitchen. It's done not behind a closed door. We bring tutors that are background checked. We bring tutors that are standardized to a much higher level than what you might find elsewhere. And we've taken this fragmented market segment and we've professionally standardized it. And we bring another option to the communities that we serve that wasn't there before. So you charge a parent for personalized attention to your child, personal service, one-on-one, the full hour belongs to your child, not a part of it, and working on the need that they've got in real time, not some other curriculum that somebody else thinks is better than yours. That's pretty much
it. Well, certainly, I mentioned the common denominator word of education. Now I'll have to use another common denominator word of rewarding. Because it seems like through your efforts with the Diversity Institute and PAFI and of course now with Tutor Doctor, they really seem to be very rewarding because, as your old mentor said, you're making a difference. And I think hats off to you and to all your efforts in this, and certainly hats off to Tutor Doctor because as entrenched as I am in franchising, quite frankly, I can say I didn't know. And that really goes a long way in making a difference in people's lives. And ironic as it is, I had my own experience last night with respect to, you know, tutoring somebody. And a quick story, somebody I know that is a waitress in a Mexican restaurant under these new initiatives has an opportunity because she's been here and gone through school here and trying to work towards citizenship, had not finished high school, and as one of the requirements, she had to get her GED, and she made it through in flying colors in math and science and history, but absolutely hit a wall with respect to English and of course, reading comprehension, as one could imagine when English is a second language. And she had called my wife and I last night and said, can you meet with me? I really am having a tough time with this. And when I sat down with her on the computer, online, and we went through it, it was, you know, wow. I mean, of course, it was a throwback to me. It's been a long time since being in high school and going through that. But it was able to come back and say, okay, let's do this in a very methodical, problem-solving way. And it's amazing how many people just don't know that. And we're talking about education, but again, as you talk about the professional athletes and what have you, the extension of that, you know, comes down into everyday life and problem solving and dealing with issues and knowing how to look at things systematically that will help them in their career, outside their career, into their next career, into entrepreneurship, into whatever they're looking to do if they go through that systematic process. And I think, you know, from what I'm hearing too, the doctor really is doing a good job of establishing that foundation.
Paul, I'm even going into universities and colleges now and giving talks to students who, when they signed on to go to Cornell or an Ivy League school or otherwise, you know, didn't necessarily go there with the thoughts that they're going to graduate with their degrees from an Ivy League college or maybe not even Ivy League and you know, get into business for themselves. But there's a harsh reality here that, you know, I hate to be the grim reaper sometimes, but 23 or 24 million Americans are out of work right now, and each graduating class each spring adds another million to the number, and plus minus. And when these young kids get out of school with whatever the degrees are, I mean, back similarly to the athlete again, You know, you've had all these years of preparation to get your degree, and now you can't wait to go out to the real world and put that degree to work. Well, there are 23 million out of work or underemployed who also have that piece of paper with the same maybe course of study that you got your degree in, and maybe they too have had years of experience already, practical experience, before the reset button got hit. So they've got the degree, and they've got some years of experience, and they're sitting on the bench. What's that going to mean to you when you get out of school? I mean, if they've got experience and they can't find the work, how are you going to find the work? So I'm having conversations with students about entrepreneurship and franchising and looking for ways to help introduce a crop of upcoming young entrepreneurs, because if we've learned anything in the years past, stories like the one you alluded to earlier with John Rachi, you know, when we see people sitting at a discovery day that are in their 50s looking to buy a franchise, not because they wanted to, but because they're faced with the reality and the need, what about somebody who could proactively take ownership of their life right now and before you get married and have a couple of kids and responsibilities of other mouths to feed? Right now, think about owning your business and owning your life and getting out of school and taking charge and being a victor instead of a victim and getting out there and starting something now. Tutor Doctor is a great concept for that as well. Again, the low threshold of entry. And who better than a student? I mean, I asked this question at Cornell, and I'll be doing this program again down at Nova with at Cheryl Babcock's International Institute for Franchise Education in Fort Lauderdale next month. You know, who better than a student can relate to the value proposition that a concept like Tutor Doctor delivers? I asked at Cornell, had a room of almost 100 people, how many of you have been tutored? Almost every hand in the room went up. How many have you been tutors? How many of you have been tutors? Almost every hand in the room went up. So there, you know, it's a great connection for a young mind to see the need. And with our kind of program and when you're in the business of tutoring, you kind of better tutor your own, right? So we've got pre-education and training, intensive training, and then a lot of mentoring and post-training support that keeps us and our franchisees very hardwired, that I have confidence that these young students with a lot of academic education and limited practical experience can hit the gate and run and become six. And we've got some very young Tutor Doctor franchisees that are proving that already. Young franchisees that are in their 20s that are just really knocking it. So it's just a great place to be at a great time to be there. And again, we're in changing and uncertain times, but we have to seize the moment and remember that what I said at the beginning, Paul, change is certain. Growth is optional.
Yep. You know, when Steve Jobs, obviously everybody knows, is the founder, one of the founders of Apple, passed away, his partner and co-founder of Apple, Steve Wozniak, was asked, will there ever be somebody like Steve Jobs again? And he said, under normal, and I'm paraphrasing this, but he said, under normal circumstances, I would say no. But to your point, he said there are so many young, aspiring individuals with entrepreneurial flair that are in our schools right now, very talented, and ones that have already left school that are either unemployed or underemployed, that he thinks that's going to be a big part of a spark in entrepreneurship moving forward. And I really think that speaks volumes, and that's right in line with what you said. I also think there's another aspect of franchising and the way things are unfolding because of the economic uncertainties or the economic challenges that are facing us. And we're starting to see it in the housing area with these multi-generational homes. I know they're starting to become big in California where they're actually building homes with two or three families in mind. And I know in some of the franchise brands that I'm associated with, I'm starting to see an older candidate, not only, as you said, that, you know, now has hit a crossroads in their life where they're saying, I've got to do something, but where they're wanting to get involved with something for their single-parent child, let's just say, that is now home. I mean, with divorce rates climbing up over 50%, we're seeing more of that. And because of the economic uncertainties and conditions, they're moving back in with their parents. But now they're also starting to get to the point of, you know, maybe, you know, grandma and grandpa or mom and dad are getting involved in a business for the benefit of this single parent that may have a degree but may be underemployed or maybe even facing the glass ceiling if it's a female. So there's so many different things, and I really like the way you're out-of-the-box thinking for these atypical franchise candidates, you know, has unfolded during your career and obviously seems to continue to gain traction even through Tutor Doctor. And I really think in all of franchising, we need to be thinking more outside the box. And heck, if we can't think outside the box and it's not working, create a new box.
I couldn't agree with you more, Paul.
Before, I mean, the story John Rashi told about how he got moving along during Katrina, I mean, you know, he created a new box and didn't even realize the box he was creating. And it's just a remarkable story of total entrepreneurship.
Well, I'll tell you something. There's something about our business model, Paul, that is the most unique thing. I love seeing people when they come to their first IFA convention and they can't get their heads around how open and caring and sharing franchising is as a community. As you know, you can have three or four different competitors in the same market sector sitting in a room and sharing openly. And coming to a convention for the first time and you see a guy like Fred DeLuca after all these years still sitting there talking with sparkle in his eyes about, you know, franchising and what it's meant to him. There is this thing about franchising that is just as unique as anything could be, because anyone who's successful in our business model understands that there's not a linear progression for growth. It's quantum leaps. It's the 1+1=we, and that's what makes it work. And if we properly manage the expectations of those that we invite to join our brands, and we get them thinking with both the left and the right side of their brains, and make sure that their expectations are properly managed, and they understand what our expectations are and what it will take for them to properly manage ours, and we define clearly what our roles are, and we each put our heads down and then set upon doing what it takes to make it work, then you'll find no better business model in the world than the one that we are both graced by being in, to invite others to come and join and to take leaps that can make life-changing differences for whatever the reasons, whether it's those multi-generational families, whether it's the visually impaired, whether it's young kids, retiring parents. You know, it's about making the leap of faith and saying I can do this better myself than anyone can do it for me, whether that's an employer, whether it's a government that wants to be in the private sector. You know, it's taking stock of yourself and becoming the most that you can be. And what a better way to do that than having the playbook so that you don't have to invent it all while you're doing it. You can just put your head down and execute a plan that's already got some traction and got the merits of some history behind it and make it better every day for yourself and your families.
Yeah, and certainly when you mention managing expectations, I like to refer to that as, you know, truth, trust, and transparency.
There you go.
that are exhibiting that. You know, definitely are managing expectations and truly understand the interdependency that the franchise relationship really is and should be. Well, Stan, I really appreciate you taking the time today. I look forward to seeing you at Franchise Update Leadership Conference and other franchise events. Do you have any parting words for our audience today?
No, I just thank you, Paul, for the opportunity to share the time and shame on the both of us for taking so long to get to this place where we could each spend a little more time with the other and just have this conversation and share it with all the good people who are going to hear it. So I thank you for the privilege and for the opportunity, both.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Until next week, my name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.